People think time is precious, but it's not. Time is savage. It always wins.
What we do now, in this moment, has the power to determine the future.
We haven't come this far to lose everything now.
Bring him to Discovery. Blow this place to hell.
Transfer complete.
Hello, and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge...
This is Tyler Orton being reinstated after all of 5 minutes.
And we're here this week to talk about episode 11 of the second season of Star Trek Discovery, Perpetual Infinity.
Okay, Cam, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to just give my hot take right now. I think this might be the first episode of the second season where maybe the arc works as kind of an episode here, where I'm not just kind of feels like the show's dragging its heels. Right. We're actually getting a little bit of payoff for what they've been building up to here. I think this is the first arc-heavy episode. We've had some good standalones. I think this is the first arc-heavy episode that really works for me for the second season. Where are you at right now with Perpetual Infinity?
I think this might be the first arc-based episode with, like, emotion attached to the arc.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of the arc stuff has been very plot-driven.
Yes.
Whereas a lot of it is driven by the emotion and the relationship between Burnham and her mother, so there's something to actually hang on to that's actually compelling, whereas the stuff in the past was a lot about teasing or just, like, plot developments.
Yeah, this is, I think, the most character-based arc episode that we've gotten, and I think that's really where Star Trek Discovery really gets a lot of good stuff to cover, though. It's the character moments that we've always been clinging to throughout both seasons here.
Clinging to like a tether. This show loves tethers.
Who can blame them, though? Yeah. Have you ever played tetherball?
Ash Tyler has.
I can tell, yes. And just picture him on the beach, just, you know, like hitting that tetherball as hard as possible.
Do you remember those old comic strip things for, like, muscle gain programs? I picture Ash Tyler as the guy who gets the sand kicked in his face and comes back later.
Yeah.
And is like, now I'm the one in charge of the beach.
Barrel chested.
That's
like,
right.
Just ready to like rip apart any of those big bullies on the beach.
Taking it to the streets on the tetherball court.
So wait, would the big bully on the beach be the equivalent of a Borgified Leland?
I think it is. Yeah, okay. I think that is a perfect analogy.
There we go. Okay.
He's the one kicking sand in Ash Tyler's face.
Let's be honest. I think
I think life kicks sand in Ash Tyler's face, but in this case, we'll go with Leland.
Okay. I think let's just start with Burnham and Gabriel here.
Right.
Like, I'm really attached to this, and sometimes I think Star Trek Discovery maybe kind of leans on certain character beats or plot beats that I expect. I like that a lot of
right.
this, it's giving us the moments that we don't necessarily expect here. Number one, let's get into this. I'm still very confused about how exactly old Gabriel Burnham is supposed to be.
Right.
Has she been going through time for 20 years, or has this been like a 1 year experience for her?
Like, I get the sense it's been like 20 years.
But like, does that make any sense with regards to time travel?
Well, she got stranded and aged, and all these experiments were her popping back and forth. But I think she was aging normally 950 years from now. And she's been stuck there since.
Okay, yeah. It's still very unclear to us. We had a big debate about it in, I think, our deleted episode, the one that it was lost to the ether.
We also had it in the video, actually, from last week.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So we had debate about that. Still unclear to me. But guess what? I'm always wrong, so it doesn't matter.
My sister actually pointed out in the video, she's like, Tyler looks at you like you're an idiot when you say that you think she's actually been aged 20 years or whatever.
Well,
that made me laugh.
In all fairness.
And I said, what's new?
I was going to say, you know, what is new? Total tangent here, but my sister has been looking up photos for my mom's 60th birthday. She wants to do like a slideshow. She found a picture of me as an infant and I have a look on my face where it's Tyler gives person stupid eyes, which if you talk to anybody, I've got a certain look on my face that just...
I'm looking at it now.
I know. It just screams, you're stupid, you know. So maybe we can share that photo on the blog post infant Tyler with the condescending eyes. It's it's hilarious. Sums up everything you need to know about
that. Would make a heck of a point of light Photoshop.
Oh, God. Oh, that's dark, Cam. That is dark.
Thank you. I'm here all week.
But look, the Burnham Gabriel stuff, it really works for me. Because guess what? I understand where Gabriel's coming from. Where is it really time for me to have this, you know, person-to-person encounter with this woman who I've been watching for, you know, years and years as she grows into a woman? That moment towards the end of it where they finally encounter each other, I felt everything that was going on here. Like the pain within Burnham, the conflict within Gabriel. And I have to say, Sonia Stone, I've loved her throughout her tenure on The Wire. I think this is just such a great casting choice. The whole time I was thinking like, oh, I don't know how long she is for the role of Gabrielle.
Right.
I wish she could have been like an admiral or something, that someone we knew would have been showing up throughout the perpetuity of Star Trek Discovery's run.
Where are you at? Like Tig Notaro.
Whatever happened to like this engineer?
Jet Reno? Who knows?
Okay. That's, Ken, where are you at right now with the Gabrielle and Mama B stuff?
I thought it paid off really well. It actually reminded me of Matt Damon in Interstellar.
Evil Matt Damon?
Yeah, not the evil part, but more like the disconnected from humanity. And this, we actually got more of the connection back where she, did have that awakening, like, lowered her guard at the end. But, like, I loved how much of this was keeping Michael at bay, but also having these talks with, like...
Did you just say keeping Michael at bay?
I did, actually.
Okay, a big Transformers fan here.
But also having, like, that talk with Giorgio about... You know, you're going to be looking over Burnham for me. Like, she got to have these talks with, like, Pike and with Giorgio that still brought emotion out. We just didn't quite see her crumble with Burnham and actually kind of open herself up until later in the episode.
One of the very effective things here for me was watching Burnham go through her mother's logs of these 893 missions that the Red Angel went on.
Didn't Matt Damon have those in Interstellar? I think he did.
I don't recall. Yeah. I've only seen that one twice, but still worth a watch for those who may not have caught it. Sorry for that Matt Damon spoiler I just dropped there for those who may not have caught it. But you know what? This movie's like 5 years old. I'm not guilty.
Yeah.
But look, just usually watch. Okay. The other thing that made me laugh is apparently the Red Angel has the menagerie camera on it where it's able to observe everything.
The classic Star Trek camera where people's memories reflect exactly what we saw on the show.
Look, I'm looking at you, Will Riker from Shades of Grey. But look,
complete with editing.
But to me, it was very effective, though. And these things usually kind of make me like just kind of shrug. I thought this was great. This is the great character stuff. You can understand the torment that Gabrielle's been going through, and it's reflected within Burnham's own reactions here. And this is the stuff that I really wish Discovery... I wish they went to that well more often, but you know what? If they kept doing it, then it would lose its impact.
Sure.
So all I can say is that I'm very happy with how effective this was in this episode here.
I have to believe, like, this episode ends with Gabriel being sent back into the time stream back to 950 years from now, or from then, I should say. But I have to believe this character will be removed from the equation, because the sense of, like, this character being set up as someone who's basically saved Michael Burnham from death multiple times... It's basically a guardian angel character that can look over Burnham. So you have to kind of remove that if you want to have tension in future seasons.
I think it's guaranteed that she will cease to exist, however we want to interpret that.
Do you think they'll bring her to the modern time?
Huh.
Well, you still have three episodes. Like, this episode feels like kind of the setup for the finale, but we still have 3 hours left of story.
How does Burnham not take... an extendo sabbatical just to catch up with her mom, though. Like, I wonder if that, like, I would hope that...
Her mom's the new chief engineer.
No, she replaces Ash Tyler as the Section 31 liaison for Discovery.
Yeah.
So, I suspect not. I suspect that she's not going to be held in the present here. I think it's either she goes back in time and gets vaporized by Klingon, or sure. else she has to go forward in time and make sure that this sphere is secure. I think there will be a sacrifice arc going mm-hmm. forward. So that's my best guess. Where are you leaning towards, Cameron?
It's really tough. I mean, it would be pretty bleak if this is the last we see of her just being, you know, launched back mm-hmm. into 950 years from now. But it's also kind of complicated to bring that character back into the modern time in terms of an ongoing series.
I do think we will see her again.
I think we'll see her again, but I don't think she's going to just come join the Discovery timeline.
No, I have to believe that, you know, we'll see her again and there will be some sort of sacrifice
sure.
involved with that.
Or she's a character who just kind of has lost her powers but exists in some sort of time phase where maybe we get her brought back in the finale of the series or something like that. Like, she's just kind of...
Of the series.
Like, maybe it's like a lingering character out there somewhere.
I have to believe they're going to wrap this up by the end of season two.
You think so? I mean, I think they're definitely going to wrap up all of the Red Angel mystery and all that sort of thing, but you can still have little threads that can continue into ongoing stories.
I just think it's such a big thing to have Burnham's own mom hanging around. Right. Just... like, nondescriptly.
We'll see.
Like that, I think that's kind of like a tough narrative pull to ask the
only
audience.
The thing is, you look at the character of Burnham.
I don't think this is going to be a series finale is the return of Gabriel.
The only thing is, I look at the character of Burnham, and it's like, what is this character striving for throughout the course of her series?
Well, what does she want? And that's like something that you always have to ask of your main character.
And say we're like, okay, she wants to be a captain. We know that everything that happens in Star Trek going forward after this series, like the name Michael Burnham is not known as one of the great captains of Star Trek. And so it's like...
it can be retconned. I swear to God.
Sure,
when Star Trek Picard premieres, we're going to have the USS Burnham in the fleet.
Or Picard's like, you know, it reminds me of the time Burnham was facing down the Klingons. You know, but if you told me the story was like Burnham finding her family again over the course of, like, the, you know, kind of bookending the series with that, having some sort of completion more in terms of her personal life than her career life, that would make sense to me.
Often I find, though, the constant that thread that we see in Star Trek series is that the people on the ship are essentially our main characters' families. So I have to believe she has been doing that throughout the run of the series. I have to believe that this character arc with her mom, it's going to be concluded in a satisfying way. Because I think, like, just leaving it as a lingering thing over the course of a series, it's unfair to the audience who's been invested in this so far. And I think because it's such a big, big burden mm-hmm. on Michael.
Burnham?
big Burnham on Burnham.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to weigh on her too much if this isn't really resolved in a way. I would love to have Gabrielle as like an ongoing character, but I just don't see her, as you say, existing within this current Discovery timeline.
Right.
So,
well, maybe she's the season three captain.
Who else is not up for contention at this point? So, no, maybe it's a Borgified Leland. Can we talk about Borgified Leland briefly?
Yeah. I think we can talk more than briefly.
Okay, I don't actually think it's the Borg at all.
Right.
But well, I really think that the writers or the producers really want you to think of it that way. Because, look,
it's very open to interpretation. It's whatever Data was on that sphere. It could be the Borg. It could be what created V'ger. It could be anything.
No, it's not the Data on the sphere, though, right? It's Control getting loose and then having the future version of Control influencing the modern Control.
Right.
And then trying to get access to that sphere Data, which could make it, you know, even more powerful. This is my interpretation. I could be totally off.
It's going to be very interesting and rewarding to do the rewatch, where we actually know the end game, so we can actually backtrack these little details a little better.
Another Borg reference for you listeners out there.
It will be the best of both worlds to do my rewatch.
I definitely think if we go down that path, we're really making a descent here, Cam. Mm-hmm. And I think that we should consider, you know, iBorg is not necessarily in the equation.
you know, you have to look at the end game here. Mm-hmm. Where are we going with the evolution of the AI?
I think we're going, it's obviously Unimatrix Zero.
Like, right,
that's,
right.
That's where we're
going. You start there and then you move up to one and two and three. But yeah, it's
I've got a
Icheb.
I don't think we can top that.
No, no. But what did you think of this whole possessed Leland thing?
Okay, number one, I definitely think the producers want us to feel as if like there's images of the Borgs being emulated here.
Oh, but yeah.
I don't necessarily think this is the Borg.
It's kind of like having the, you know, having your cake and eating it too. You know, you can kind of allude to the Borg and give people quote unquote the Borg without quite dealing with all the canon issues that you have to kind of jump through to get the Borg on the show.
But as soon as I started to see holographic Burnham and Saru, etc. coming out there, I'm just like, oh, we're finally going to get the manifestation of control, which you and I talked about, I think, in the deleted version of, I shouldn't say deleted, our lost version of last week's episode.
The one the Gremlins took. Yeah.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. But we're talking about like how we need to have some sort of manifestation of the AI here. And I think I was like, good, we finally have that here, and finally going to a character that we think has just turned into a bit of a dope over the course of the season, so finally this guy gets something interesting to do, even though he's not necessarily the same character.
I like that initially they went with the classic DS9 trope of having different characters from the Discovery show play the various incarnations of the AI.
Yeah, well, you know, you can cheap out on getting new actors.
It reminded me of the wormhole aliens.
Oh, yeah, of course. In this case, like, I think it's interesting. He kind of gets the T-1000 treatment.
I was thinking more the Terminator Genesis treatment, the John Connor treatment.
Oh,
where it's like
okay.
The nanoprobes take him over. And,
gotcha.
Yeah, and I'm like, no one remembers that movie, nor likes it. But that's what was popping into my head. I was like, this is a better version of Terminator Genesis.
I'd love to
Jay Courtney.
I'd love to think the writers, you know, come to the writer's room and say, guys, this hidden gem, it's called Terminator Genesis.
Right.
It's just awesome.
This obscure little art house gem I found.
Yeah. So let's go with that. Look, I think we finally got some interesting stuff with Leland. It's given a face to what is turning out to be the antagonist of the season.
Yeah.
He now has control of the Section 31 ship, and no one else is the wiser aboard that ship. It's going to be interesting how he pursues this. By the way, why can't they give the Section 31 ship a name? Did you hear Bryce calling
because
it Section 31 ship?
Because it's a stealth ship.
Oh,
they don't have a name.
I forgot. Yeah. It's how well undercover they really are, despite the fact that even Amanda from Vulcan knows
I liked how nonchalant Leland was about his eye being jabbed.
Yeah.
He took it pretty well. That's the second nonchalant eye loss I've seen in recent memory. I'm not going to say the other one because I don't want to spoil it out there, but there's another one out there in the pop culture world right now.
Okay. I think I know one you're talking about. Okay. I don't know. If people want spoilers, you can watch lots of content.
Right.
That's our suggestion
here.
But at first I thought you were talking about Detmer.
No.
Detmer has really gotten to the consciousness of the world at large when it comes to pop culture. I say that, though. And with regards to Leland, it's like we debated a lot about whether he lived or died.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was dead. And then I think we debated the nature of that. I think you were leaning towards Giorgio setting a trap, and I thought it had to do with control.
Right.
But you thought he was alive. I thought he was dead. So I guess
it was a bit of a
draw here.
We were both going down both the right avenue and the wrong avenue.
Yeah. Do you agree that, you know, maybe this is finally the most interesting thing he has to do so far this season, even though he's not really technically the same Leland that we know?
I would say maybe the most interesting things in terms of scenes to play for me actually with Leland was the episode where it was him kind of going head to head with Pike.
Okay.
And having that kind of duality of this guy who knows Pike and is kind of friendly with him, but also being, you know, a Section 31 schemer, and having Cornwell kind of settling the two of them. Like, to me, that was giving me shades of a character that I was expecting to get fleshed out more,
mm-hmm.
and I just didn't really. But this is, I guess, the next step to take a character that you've kind of had not really building over the last handful of episodes.
Shades of a character that needs to be fleshed out more. Are you doing more Star Trek episode puns, Cam? Wow.
We'll see how many I can do.
Okay. I know how many I can do. 10011110. So anyway, the Leland stuff is working for me.
Did it work for you though when he's like a fighting force tearing through members of Starfleet security?
The whole time I kept thinking, is like, is Doug Jones gonna have to sing for every individual funeral for all of these background players, which is what Arium was up until she got like her one standout episode, and then we literally have Saru serenading the entire crew.
Yes.
So that's where my mind went. To me, is it really fun to watch like an all-out powerful being just beat the crap out of people? I kind of disassociate everything. I'm just like, well, there's no real character stuff within. Like, I like the action, the fight sequences that have, like, character moments built into it.
Sure.
This is just, like, some guy just, like, you know, pulverizing people. I'm just like, eh.
I think it can work if you make their abilities somehow alien or visually interesting in a way where we're like, how would you deal with that?
Yeah.
But Alan Van Sprang is the actor who plays Leland. He is not, I don't think, a very like skilled martial artist or anything. Like, it didn't look like someone who was an unstoppable force in his fight scenes. You know, the scenes were fairly well staged and blocked. But when I'm watching him take people down, he doesn't look like something where I'm like, that's unstoppable. I don't even know how you deal with that. Whereas Michelle Yeoh, he seems more like the one who would be more fearsome.
Cam, you need to stop with the title puns with regards to Star Trek and Chris Pine in the movie Unstoppable.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah, maybe we could have done at least some more Wire Foo.
Or just make his powers more interesting in some way, because at that point they know he's an AI. So, like, have him have abilities that are beyond what, you know, fists and feet, basically.
Yeah, you know, is it really...
Like an electroshock hands or something, I don't know, just give me something.
What if he could... You know, make the phasers that are obviously have some sort of computers within them. What if he could make them backfire?
Sure, yeah.
Like, that would be kind of like interesting or original.
Right, like just something. And I know that can kind of get expensive. It's a lot cheaper to have him just trading punches and kicks. But yeah, I just think if you make his powers more, even like kind of like godlike, you know, that's something that Star Trek likes to do a lot. We've seen it this season, and give him sort of powers beyond essentially what they can comprehend dealing with. It's just something that is a little more interesting, I think, visually.
I would like to just see him fly.
Yeah, but I actually thought that they might kill Giorgio in this episode, because you had the setup of the mom saying that you are going to sacrifice yourself for my daughter. You have him attacking. Burnham gets, I think, shot with a phaser. I think she's down or something.
Grazed,
sure. And then Giorgio steps in the way to fight him. And then I'm like, in my head, I'm having like the conspiracy theories go off. I'm like, what if that entire Section 31 spinoff thing was a smokescreen to mask the death of Giorgio in an episode? How amazing would that be? They created a fake actor for Voke. They're not above these sorts of weird stunts. That would be incredible.
I never once went there.
I did, and it was fun for a short time.
Okay, so we've been talking a lot about, say, broader themes of the series. Can I just geek
out?
Other than tethers, yeah. But can I geek out? Are you making a reference to Us? The Jordan Peele film that came out this past weekend, Cam?
Not so much. I was thinking more of Ash Tyler being Burnham's tether.
Okay, well, yeah. You know what? I'm going to put those scissors back in my pants.
Right. So, that sounded a little weird, but okay. Let's go for it.
Dirtier than I meant it to. Yeah. But go see Us, people. It's a great film. But if I can get into the geek out granular sort of stuff that I think we all can relate to as Star Trek fans, though, they do establish a couple bits of information here. Mm-hmm. There are 7,000 active ships in Starfleet right now. This is post-Klingon War.
Right.
It makes me have to do some math in my head. I don't know. Do you think it's fair to say that the average starship complement, let's say the 1701D has 438. We know that the Discovery has 130. Mm-hmm. Let's meet in the middle. Let's say that the average crew complement is about 250.
Sure.
And so multiply that by, 7,000? I am horrible at math, Cam.
You've taken me down a road I can't follow.
Yeah. We're either looking at, I think about like what?
I'm an English major.
Okay. But about like 2 million crew members just aboard starships in Starfleet, plus you probably have all the staff on star bases, on planets, all that. Let's be generous and say double that. 4 million Starfleet officers. Is it interesting to you that every single Starfleet captain seems to know every single Starfleet captain that they encounter in every single Star Trek show we ever watch?
There's a lot of conferences.
Okay.
They all go and they know each other. You know, it's like a week-long thing.
Yeah. It's a whole lot of people in Starfleet. That's all I can say. But, like, I think that math, they probably thought about that for a long time and it probably makes sense. I think we know in the 24th century there are 150 planets within, or I should say maybe star systems, maybe is the accurate way to reflect it. But so I would guess around this time is about 100, political bodies that are all part of the Federation at this point. So if Starfleet is serving as the paramilitary / exploration group, you know, I think the math actually kind of adds up to assume that there are about 7,000 ships actively serving in Starfleet post-Klingon War, which I'm sure they're, like, quite devastated by.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, it's interesting to me. So that's my granular geek-out moment for now. Anything jump out to you as well with regards to, I don't know, just little tidbits that you found?
Just, I did like the fun little reference / sad reference of Pike's future.
Oh, yeah. That was...
where Burnham's mom is like, I've seen your future. You don't want to know.
Hey, what was Pike's reaction?
He didn't seem... He just seemed kind of nonplussed.
He was like, eh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If someone said, you don't want to know, would you want to know?
Yes, because then I would think that I still...
It's something extraordinary. Like, it sounds terrible.
Well, I would have to believe that I would have the ability to fight the future.
Right.
You know, even though
like
that...
Fox Mulder.
But the fact of the matter is I think one of the things that they're saying here is that, you know, the future is impenetrable to a certain degree. And that is kind of the journey that Gabriel is going on here, is like trying to destroy the sphere's data any way possible, and it's proving to be impossible here. So
Tyler, time is savage. It always wins.
That's true.
It's the new time is the fire in which we burn.
How? Burnham? Yeah, I was going to ask you, how does this stack up versus one Dr. Soren from Star Trek Generations?
Time is the fire in which we burn is the greatest to me. Like, okay. I'm going to use that one probably my whole life. But the time is savage one was pretty good. Pretty good. I applauded them for the effort.
Yeah.
And I also applauded, you know, another little Star Trek quirk, you know, when we're talking about that sort of thing, was the Shakespeare reference, the Hamlet line.
Was that one that you knew offhand and that you recite to your friends whenever you end up at a restaurant?
While I was a Shakespeare student for a few semesters in university, Hamlet was not one I studied a lot. I did it briefly. We did read it, and I believe it was the first one we did in the Introduction to Shakespeare. But there was other ones we studied far more later down the road.
I'm just curious, because Shakespeare comes up so much in Star Trek.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it's taken this long for Discovery to drop a Shakespeare reference.
Never been one before?
I think this is the most direct Shakespeare reference that they've done, though.
I like how Burnham's like, Hamlet, hell yeah.
Oh, yeah. But I was going to ask, what is your favorite Shakespeare play?
I'm a big, like, I really do like Macbeth a lot. I was very excited to hear that Joel Coen's directing a Macbeth adaptation today, starring Denzel Washington and Frances McDormand.
Oh, like on stage?
No, a film.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I was excited to see that today. But Macbeth is one. I actually really like Titus Andronicus. That's kind of that people don't, they always go, that's one of his lesser works. But it has all of the kind of dark, kind of grisly humor that I really enjoy, that kind of really like dark horror type humor. So I really like that one as well. Mm. And actually, Richard III is great.
I'm a much simpler person. You'll find me in the peanut gallery more often. So I veer more towards the comedies.
I've never been as big on the comedies. Actually, I should say Othello is another favorite of mine.
But... Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I would say I'm more of an Othello fan than I would give it up to say Macbeth.
Right.
Even though I think Macbeth is great. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard to diss Macbeth personally. I'm not saying I could write better. Sorry, Shakespeare. No, but so for me, The Tempest, number one by far. And then I really do think Midsummer's Night's Dream, is a solid Shakespeare.
I've never read that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Give it a shot or go to a performance. I think we do have Bard on the Beach here in Vancouver.
Be going.
I don't know if they're doing Midsummer's
Night.
They're
not this year, no.
Yeah. I think they've already actually announced what they're doing. And
yes,
Bard is always really good for those who've never been to Vancouver. They're always good at like just doing kind of a new twist on Shakespeare. Mm-hmm, now that we have alienated all of our non-Shakespeare fans.
Hey, Shakespeare is a big part of Star Trek, so...
I 100% agree.
Yeah.
How many Shakespeare references are we going to get in the Star Trek Picard series, Cam?
Oh, I think we're going to get a lot.
Is that going to be the opening scene? Is just Picard, like, in the holodeck with his holographic version of Brent Spiner doing, like, another Shakespeare play?
I mean, okay.
But
no,
he's gonna be a
no, that's not going to happen. But,
a mocap Brent Spiner.
Would you be shocked if the Picard series ends with a Shakespeare quote?
No, I wouldn't be
yeah,
shocked.
Yeah, that would be, I think, to me, pretty fitting. So I guess we're going to have to see. That's a few years down the road. But
a few years down the road.
We'll see if this pays off, this prediction.
Either that or a Melville quote somehow, you know.
Right.
Well, would you be shocked if Alfred...
I thought you said Orville for a second. Orville. I was like, I don't think that's going to happen, Tyler.
I was going to ask you, though. Like, do you think there's a possibility that maybe Alfre Woodard could somehow make an appearance on this? I think anything's possible. Though.
No.
She's not coming back?
I don't think so, no.
She's going to be on that new Apple TV series.
Right.
So I don't know if Apple and CBS All Access are going to be seen eye to eye with regards to sharing talent. So,
right.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, look. I'm loving some of the other stuff that we're getting with our more ancillary characters in this one.
Well, I want to talk about Ash, Tyler, and Georgiou
yes.
in this episode because we're seeing more development of these two, whereas like they've kind of just been following a lot of the Section 31 plan, which was kind of dopey. We got to see the two of them collaborating amongst the two of them a bit here and actually working beyond Leland's purview.
Like they actually seem to have some sort of agency amongst themselves as opposed to being like just clad leather folks that seem to be running the rest of the operation here.
Yeah, and we've made fun of Ash Tyler a lot because it's kind of fun, but I feel like this episode is actually really strong for him.
It seems like this is the first time all season he hasn't been like just a passive agent with regards to what's going on here.
He wasn't sitting in a room waiting for someone to come talk to him.
No, he was at one point.
I know he was.
Yeah, so that's a sad thing.
But he also went to rooms to talk to people. Oh,
that's
so
true. That's
progress.
True.
Progress.
Like, okay, so let's talk a little bit about Ash Tyler. He made it onto escape pod after getting, you know, like...
Stabbed,
like right in the guts. I have to believe he's going to make it out alive. And do we get a Culber doing an operation?
Oh, that'd be... I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, I'm curious about that because...
And kind of like a... Kind of some snarky comments directed at Ash Tyler as he's on the recovery bed.
I don't want them to do this, but do you think they'll try to derive any tension about over Culber trying to decide, should I save him or should I not?
You mean like the TNG episode, The Enemy, with Worf donating blood to the Romulan?
Well, you mean not donating
blood.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Right, why would Dr. Pollard not be the one doing the Ash Tyler operation?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I feel bad for Dr. Pollard. She was front and center the first, like, what, four or five episodes? She was in, like, every single episode doing a lot of stuff, and then she's just disappeared off the face of the planet.
I think Discovery has actually been really good at something that's also kind of hurting the show in the sense of, like, when they cast their fill-in characters, the ones, these bit players, they're casting really distinctive-looking actors who you actually remember.
Yeah.
But it's also harming the show because you actually want to see more of them because you actually remember what they look like. When they swap out TNG Bridge Crew, you don't even notice. Whereas, like, with this show, a lot of them have personality just on their face alone. Just, like, their casting has been really strong. And so you kind of expect to see more of them just because they kind of pop on screen.
Yeah. Speaking of which, we got one... Lieutenant Nilsen, she made, would you call it a half-second cameo on the console?
A half-second seems about right.
Okay.
Yeah, so, the camera panned across her.
Yeah, at least we're getting some continuity there with the... Look, she got a huge moment in the previous episode, The Red Angel, where she arrived on Bridge. And I think most audience members are like, eh?
Yeah.
Like,
and they held that shot like it was like Tim Conway showing up on an old like comedy.
Literally every single person on the bridge just gawked at her as if, I don't know, they thought Arium was somehow come alive. I don't know. It was just,
I would have loved it if a character just turned around and be like, welcome home, Nilsen.
It was just such a bizarre moment to me for like a show where like, I would say like, the number of people that realize that Sarah Mitich was the original Arium and is now playing Lieutenant Nilsen, after Hannah Cheeseman, who played Arium 2.0 in season 2,
yeah,
that they're aware of all this and they had a big moment to have this reveal. I just think it's so small, and I'm just like, it was such an awkward moment that pulled me out of the entire episode last episode.
I would love to know, beyond the like Star Trek Facebook groups, who noticed this and who is just like, I don't know, whatever.
You know what we should do? Let's ask Janine Smith.
Yeah, no kidding. Although, you know what? I've become increasingly baffled as to who exactly watches Discovery, because it's just something I've noticed over the last bit when I look at like recaps of the show. Like Entertainment Weekly has stopped recapping Discovery altogether. Yeah. But other websites I go to that do, I look at the comments and there's like a very small number.
Yeah.
So I am very curious exactly who is watching Discovery.
I think this is more of a show where CBS kind of knows that they are building like,
oh, for sure,
a library.
Yeah.
So like the week-to-week stuff, I'm like, okay. Yeah. Because look, the numbers for CBS All Access are small, but the numbers for Netflix and the international viewers that have access to Discovery are quite big.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I'm with you. Like, I don't have a good grasp on just how big the numbers are beyond all the Facebook groups that we're in, which seem to be very, very active.
Which skew the data a big amount, because it's just like all over our news feeds is people talking about Discovery, right?
No. Skew the lore. Yeah. For me at work, I mean, there's two people I know from work that watch it. We have one of our good friends from Star Trek Las Vegas convention, Scott Hardy. Mm-hmm. He says that there are people at his work that watch it as well.
Yeah.
Cam, do you have coworkers that watch Discovery?
I actually do, yeah. Okay. But you know what? It airs on TV here in Canada, so it's a little more accessible.
Yeah.
So
for those who have cable.
Yeah, for those who have cable, but
The thing that I've noticed, though, is like Crave TV, just anecdotally from my own, you know, workplace, I like how work is how we kind of have a litmus test right now, which is interesting. But like, I think Crave TV has actually done quite well in terms of amping up subscriptions. Do you remember when like it first debuted, it was up against the other Canadian streaming service, ShowMe?
Right, yeah, yeah.
Everyone was on ShowMe. Mm-hmm. No one was on Crave. ShowMe went under, and I think people just naturally migrated to Crave because I think they've really been building up these content libraries and licensing. And I'll be honest, like a lot of like high-end American shows, especially from, say, HBO, and they've been doing quite well. And I also understand the last we looked into the ratings that were available on the Space Channel, which is on Television Canada, we wonder about, you know, the viewership of Star Trek Discovery. We know for a fact that it was actually doing extremely well here in Canada, which is a very small country. So I don't know. It's tough for me to have a good grasp on what the viewership is like of Star Trek Discovery.
I wouldn't be surprised if like very few people in, say, the U.S. markets are watching it week to week, but like a lot of them are binging it once it's all out on CBS All Access, signing up for a month or whatever.
And then canceling?
Yeah. Yeah. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
No, not at all.
Because I mean, I see people on Star Trek groups posting about how they just, you know, burned through season one fairly recently.
Yeah, burned through season one.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that I'm curious about, though, is remember when we had the first episode premiere of Star Trek Discovery and it was actually on CBS?
Yep.
Do you think that they'll do the same model with the Picard spinoff?
Maybe
for just episode one, or maybe
possible.
Two.
I would. It's just a good attempt to goose the the subscriptions to CBS All Access.
I'm genuinely fascinated what the numbers would be like for like not a cast of unknowns, but a Patrick Stewart led Star Trek spinoff. Like I think that it would exceed the ratings that Discovery got.
I think so too.
Which were quite like solid ratings for the premiere of a new Star Trek series in this day and age of television.
Yeah, and just imagine the ratings for a Section 31 spinoff.
It's right there in the name, Cam. 31. And I'm not talking millions. Yeah, so look, I'm fascinated. Look, it's looking like maybe fall that we'll get the Picard show up in the air. I'm fascinated by what the marketing is going to be like. We'll no doubt see Patrick Stewart make the rounds on like every single late night series out there. I really think that the nostalgia for Star Trek Next Generation is so strong, especially with the current generation of, say, people that grew up with the series. And I think there's going to be just this massive push to get, you know, this Picard series popular. is it going to suddenly attract 10 million subscribers to CBS All Access? I think that's a bit of a reach.
Yeah.
But will it have a negligible impact on their subscriber numbers? I say no, not at all.
Yeah. Do you think they're going to drop like a trailer for Picard with the finale of Discovery?
Ooh. So that is a very good question. I think the best we can hope for, though, is a Patrick Stewart voiceover, like a Starscape.
Right.
Like, do you think that there is going to be anything beyond that?
I don't know. I mean, the first teaser for Discovery was very, very, very simple. So yeah, that wouldn't surprise me if they kept it really simple.
Do you remember during the reveal of the logo, mm-hmm, and you know how the badges, the deltas look a little bit different? It's kind of shattered on the side.
Yeah.
And didn't we have like a friend, was it not Stefan Estanilla, that was actually like talking about like what it could actually mean? And I kind of, as I often do, because I have those condescending baby eyes,
of course,
I kind of dismissed it and said, it's probably just some little flourish that like an intern at CBS put in there.
Yeah.
But it did actually manifest into something that was kind of one of the big visual cues of the series. So mm-hmm, I am curious, they could put like hints there that we could pick apart with whatever sort of Picard teaser that we get. My suspicion, though, is we'll probably get something more concrete maybe come the summer. That's the more likely
around Comic-Con time.
Yeah. What can they really showcase for us, though? I don't think we'll get like an image. Like, we don't even know what the premise is of the series. All we know is that one, Patrick Stewart is attached to it.
Right.
Okay. So this has been a great discussion of Perpetual Infinity.
You know, we referenced the Section 31 spinoff. Let's get back to Georgiou. What do you think of where this character is going?
Okay, so Cam, you know, for a long time I've just been hating on Emperor Georgiou.
The character,
like,
with the best dialogue on the show, yeah.
Well, I was like, she's a sociopath. Why do I want to cheer on a sociopath the whole time? And when we had Point of Light, which I think we still think is one of the low points of the season so far, she's there just to kill people indiscriminately. I'm just like, okay. Great, and they want to give her a spinoff where we have to cheer on this person who's doing black ops and just murdering people. Great. I have to admit, I'm a complete hypocrite. I've come all around. I'm just like, give me Georgiou every single episode. She is the most dynamic character we've got.
You're taking off your I Heart Harry Mudd shirt for putting on your I Heart Georgiou shirt.
Well, that's the other thing. For all those listeners from like season one, I was just like, I don't want to see Harry Mudd. This is going to be the worst character. He is like a sex trafficker. This is just a bad move on the part of Discovery. I came around on Harry Mudd as well. So I'm just like,
Discovery is really good, actually, at taking characters who maybe shouldn't work and making them work.
I think Discovery's big strength, though, is their character stuff.
I almost think they struggle more with the things that are really obvious, surefire things that would work. They take the difficult assignments and they really like hit them out of the park. Because I look at a character like Stamets, who I love a lot, but it doesn't seem like they know how to use them.
No.
But like, you give them someone that's a tough assignment, like a Mirror Georgiou or a Harry Mudd, and they really seem to know how to turn these characters into fan favorites.
I think they know that they can get these great actors that don't have to abide by Starfleet ideals, so they can just let them chew the scenery. And I think, like, why not kind of try to inject that into some of the Starfleet characters? I guess, no, that's unfair, because look at Tilly.
Yeah.
She gets Tilly's a lot of those similar, like, just like lines that just like blast out of everywhere. Stamets, I would say for the first half of season one, he got a lot of that too. Mm-hmm. So I think that potential is still there.
Oh, I think there's boundless potential with the whole cast, even Ash Tyler. But
I mean, did you just say bound?
I did, yeah.
List potential. Cam, these puns need to stop.
But it does seem like these tough assignments seem to be the ones that intrigue them more. Yeah. It's like, how do we make Pike, a character we all know the fate of, like the most compelling character on the show? And it's like, we can do it. It just seems like they really like to take these assignments that maybe have the deck stacked against them and really create fan favorite, you know, new versions of the characters.
Did you just say the assignment?
I did.
Okay. Yeah. Boy. Boy, oh boy.
I made a progress reference too earlier and you didn't catch that, but
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was trying to think of like the worst possible pun to make, but the best.
Icheb.
I'm just going to end every single sentence with Icheb.
Yeah.
So moving forward with the characters that we have here, I'm wondering where the conclusion of say, Stamets' story is going. We know that Culbert is now reinstated as a doctor aboard the ship because he wants to help, according to him.
Yeah. Does Tilly have a place to go this season?
I think they have decided that her arc was the May arc.
Yeah.
You know, and I think with Stamets, they've decided that his arc is his marriage arc. Mm-hmm. And I think with, say, Saru, they've decided that his arc was
on
the
Kaminar,
Vorahai arc.
Yeah.
I think they've been checking a lot of things off their list, and I just keep going back to the fact that there's only three episodes left.
Yeah.
I think we've kind of concluded things with, say, all those characters that I mentioned, except that I think we need a little bit more of a final resolution to where the marriage rests right now between Hugh and Paul.
I agree. I would not be surprised, though, if we don't really find that out until the finale.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I am curious what they're going to do with Ash Tyler. I mean, yes, he could just be rejoining Discovery at some point, but I'm just really interested to see what they do with this character, because we see now he has somewhat of a relationship, a working relationship at least, with Georgiou. He was standing up to the AI and not giving the data over.
In modern time, that would be like yelling at your computer monitor.
Yeah.
I stand up to you, AI.
Yeah. But you know, we've seen that he's showing a bit of backbone, and that's what I keep waiting for that character to do, so I was excited to see him do that. And even though I thought the stealing of the AI sequence was a little goofy with the, like, colorful cube behind his back.
Sure.
He was mm-hmm.
I know.
Okay. Those classic stealth Section 31 tactics.
This giant glowing little, like, device. I'm just like, okay. Why not hide it in his comm badge?
I don't know.
I still like the fact that they do have comm badges about 100 years before we ever saw them.
Right.
Yeah.
I
can go with that.
But yeah, like, I am just curious where this character goes with his relationship with Burnham. You know, now that he's been, like, brutally stabbed, like, what does this mean for the character in the next couple episodes? Is it a quick fix and he's back on duty in the next episode, or what?
Burnham literally died in the previous episode.
That's true.
Cam. I'm sure Ash Tyler will be up and at him pretty soon.
We, of course, have to talk about Spock, because Ethan Peck has been an MVP this season, even though it took a while for him to show up. But that just shows how good he is that I would say he's an MVP of the whole season.
Well, I would like to call him an MVP. Most valuable Peck.
Well, that sounds questionable. But
it's the actor's name, Cam. I don't know what your mind is. Yeah.
But I thought, you know, he didn't have as much to do in this episode, but I thought he had some moments that were just fantastic. I loved his little, "I like science."
Do you think he's settling into kind of the Spock that we know after he went through the Talos IV incidents? He's settling into that more familiar character. He's getting a hold of his emotions, despite what we saw two episodes ago where he had that the most emotional we've probably seen Spock ever, really. And so I like that he is coming to be the character that we're more familiar with. What I really want to see is what his ultimate destination is by the end of this. Is he going back to the 1701?
I know.
Is he somehow going to be stick around Discovery in some capacity?
I know.
I think he works really, really well with the current crew. I want him to stick around. But the thing is, like, if we do get this Pike spinoff, I think he could bring a lot to that Pike spinoff too. So, like, I feel like it's a real tough decision to make about where we want him going moving forward. What do you want from the character after seeing him do some real great character moments in an episode like this? Where do you want the character going from here on forward?
I guess my answer is I don't know.
Okay.
And a lot of it is I love Ethan Peck in the role, so I want to see him shine as Spock in the future. Like, I want to see more of his version of Spock. But I'm not sure what form I want that to take. Like, I'm 100% down for, like, a Pike-led spinoff. I think that could be great. But do I want to see more of him on Discovery? I think that really opens up a real question of, like, Discovery, the show. Because, like, what is Discovery, the show? A lot of the teasing for this, for Discovery, is Alex Kurtzman repeatedly saying things like, he was just recently, I think this week, talking about, you know, in season three, we're going to further bridge the gap between Discovery and the original series. Is Discovery, at the end of the day, just a bridge series to get us to the original series? Like, what is its identity other than that? Like, do we want to keep including all these original series elements just to kind of tie it to that show? Or do we want it to have its own very distinct story that's doing its own thing? And hey, it just so happened to be 10 years before the original series.
Yeah, for me, I think the worst thing they can do is try to be a bridge series. Like, I think the best... well, you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think the best thing here is if they just go on their own path, they can be
distinct.
In which
case, you got to cut Spock loose.
I'll just put it out there. I want Spock on the 1701 if there's a Pike spinoff.
Yeah.
If this Pike spinoff is something that we've all just concocted on our heads because of right. how great Anson Mount is in this role, and the fact that they announced Rebecca Romijn was a big casting decision for them. And
the real MVP of season two Discovery.
All she did was talk about habanero sauce. Yeah. So then I hope they do keep Spock around on Discovery.
Yes.
So that's kind of where I'm at right now.
I feel the same way. I mean, I want to see more of Ethan Peck in this role, but I don't know how many avenues there are other than a Pike spinoff or Discovery seasons.
I don't think we're getting a Spock spinoff.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's tough. I would have to imagine they were confident in their casting choice, but I don't know if they ever could have expected just how good he would be and how much I feel like fans are really behind this his version of the character. Like, I'm not sensing the growing pains of fans dealing with his take on the character that you often do with, you know, recasted roles, especially famous roles.
Yeah. Well, because
you know, I remember reading even people struggling with the Chris Pine Kirk into Darkness and onwards. Like, it took, even though a lot of people absolutely loved him and loved, you know, his charisma in the role, they still struggled with, is this Kirk? Like, there was a lot of elements that people struggled with, kind of moments that seemed maybe a little outside of Kirk behavior. Whereas I don't feel like Ethan Peck has dealt with any of that stuff.
I'm surprised by how embracing the Star Trek community seems to be so far with Spock.
Yeah.
So, or Ethan Peck's version.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that means he's nailing it.
Yeah, I think he is.
Yeah.
And you know what? Credit to the Discovery writers, too, who are obviously writing him very well.
Let's say there were never any plans in the works for a Pike spinoff. This is all just, you know, something that we have deluded ourselves into believing, which, honestly, if I have to be honest, like, that's not what the clues
I know
would lead us to believe. But do you think that they would find any reason possible to just wedge Spock into the future Star Trek Discovery, knowing how great he's been in season two?
I think they would find ways.
Yeah.
You know what? If they can find ways to work Harry Mudd into the odd episode, although not so far in season two, but
which surprises me.
Does surprise me. I think they could work in ways to bring Spock in for, you know, two episodes in a season or something like that.
I'll say this, though.
I mean, Sarek has shown up lots of times, and Sarek isn't a character who necessarily has to show up on the show that often.
No, not really.
So, yeah. I mean, he shows up more on Discovery than he did on, like, the original series.
Well, you mean once?
Yeah, yeah. Once. With you know, Spock on that series.
It was a different era, Cam.
Yeah.
Yeah. But look, I'm begging the producers, get him out of that, like, monk's robe, put him in a uniform, and please shave that beard. I want the Spock as we know him.
I know.
Zachary Quinto him up right now, please.
I have to believe at the very end of this season, we're going to see him in the classic Enterprise uniform.
So we have to wait, like, at least two or three episodes.
Yeah, I think so. That's not that long, really.
No, it's coming up very quickly.
Very quickly.
Yeah. So with that in mind, mm-hmm. how are you feeling right now, I guess, as we get into our final volley of episodes coming here? Where are you at with the season right now?
Yeah, I'm just really curious what they're going to do for three episodes. Like, from where we're standing now, I'm like, okay, the AI is run loose in the Section 31 ship. But, like, does it feel for me like there's three episodes of story to tell? At the moment, no. So I feel like they're going to introduce complications in the next episode are going to lead to maybe a more ambitious finale. Because I think the premiere of this show was really ambitious. Oh, yeah. That, like, it was a little bit longer than your average episode, and the production values were really big.
Well, I got the showrunners fired, apparently.
Yeah. Oh. With
the budget issues.
That's really awkward. But I have to believe they want to go out with a bang as well. And I think the season one finale was kind of weak, and I think they know it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it did end the Klingon War. It had some moments in it that were pretty great.
It magically ended the Klingon War.
It did. But, you know,
Ex Machina.
I feel like when people are the most excited about seeing Clint Howard as Orion that doesn't speak highly to the overall ending of a story arc.
No.
You know, it's like, that's the fun stuff. Like, I feel like the Orion stuff was the stuff that people really loved.
Is Clint Howard the real Red Angel? Is that what we'll find out in the season finale? It's been him this whole time?
That would be amazing.
Baylock?
I don't think any showrunner or staff of writers wants the ending of their arc to be kind of a shrug and you whatever episode. Like, yeah. I do think they're going to want to bring it. So I'm just really curious what you do, because at this point in time now, from when we're recording this, the finale is a face-off between Discovery and the AI. Is that interesting as a big slam bang finale? Not necessarily. So I feel like there's going to be things happening in the next two episodes that are going to ramp up things in a big, bad way. Yeah, I hope so.
It wouldn't surprise me if they dispatch with Leland by the next episode. And then from there, it's about resolving, I guess, the crux of everything.
Go into the future.
I was just going to say that. Like, maybe
in the Calypso universe.
That's kind of what I think we might be tying it back to. And I'm getting more and more curious about like the relevance of the Calypso short trek that we saw, which I think is just like one of the best 15 minutes of Star Trek that we've ever had, period. And I think that it's got to tie back in a significant way to what we've been witnessing so far.
I agree. So I'm just really excited to see where they're going. This season has been very interesting to watch in that I feel like season one threw us all over the place. And so there was always the real guessing game. Where are we going? Like, what's happening? Yeah. And it was really tough to pin it down from a quality perspective because you're just like, I don't know where we're going. Now we're in the Mirror Universe. You know, the Klingon Wars wrapped up so soon. What happened? Whereas I feel like season two has not had the sort of tactic of throwing the audience around like crazy.
And it was also season one is a new experience for us in that we didn't necessarily know the tone. We didn't necessarily know the direction,
right,
the characters. It was a brand new thing for us to absorb here. I think we actually know that at this point. I agree with you.
Like, this has been a much more linear season. And I think because of that, our way of tackling it has been different than the way we tackled season one of Discovery.
I suspect, though, like when I rewatched season one as a whole, and like I think I binged it in like 1 week. My feelings didn't change dramatically,
right?
But I wonder how I'm going to feel about season two when I binge watch it maybe 6 months from now. I do suspect, knowing what is to come, I will have different interpretations of certain actions that happened here.
Yeah, and I can't wait to do that. Yeah. I'm actually really looking forward to that rewatch. So it's going to be interesting, but we only got three episodes to go, guys. We're almost there, and I just can't wait to see what the cliffhanger for season three is, if we ever get to that captain on Vulcan.
I think the Vulcan captain is just still waiting, twiddling his or her thumbs right now. I feel bad for them.
Yeah. Okay, so on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. We'll, of course, have a video up again this week. Interesting last week, the big reveal of the Red Angel. You know, we did a video on that. Not the amount of passion for that Red Angel reveal that you would have expected for a reveal like that.
Yeah.
I found that very interesting.
I think the problem was is like, you didn't get any moments with Gabriel leading up to it, so it wasn't such a big deal. And the things we didn't spend any moments with her post-reveal.
Right.
I wonder...
Context is for kings.
Thank you. Thank you, Cam. Enough. Enough.
Next week, we'll be back with episode 12 of season 2 Discovery. They are not... Icheb.
Icheb.
They are not announcing titles anymore, so we're just going to go with Icheb. And...
It's Leland turns into Icheb because of his Borg nanoprobes.
Hey, wait a second. In like Star Trek Renegades, didn't Icheb have like more Borg nanoprobes on him?
He had this like arm.
Yeah, he had like a mechanical arm and stuff like that. Yeah.
He said that he got his Borg technology like amped up.
Something like that.
This is the Star Trek Renegades fan film that was told by CBS under no certain circumstances will you be able to continue under your current moniker, Star Trek Renegades.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It was terrible. Don't worry, folks. You didn't miss anything if you didn't watch it.
Yeah.
But you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Vulcan Research Base Smith.
You can find me at Reportin. That's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N. N as in nanoprobes be Borgifying Leland.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.